Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141. 96.3 HT2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Big changes have happened in Montgomery County over the past several weeks, much around education and public safety. But that's just the beginning. There are shifting political winds as well. And joining me to talk about all things in the county is Montgomery County Executive Mark Elridge. We'll have questions for him, and he'll also answer yours. Lines are open. Give us a call right now if you have a comment or question for County Executive Mark Elridge at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. County Executive, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm hanging in there.
Good. Well, let's talk.
Last time around, you weren't there. I was there with your substitute, pinch hitting for you.
Yeah, well, you know, we are a whole team here at WHUR. So let us get to issues regarding education in Montgomery County, specifically as it relates to public safety around education. As you know, the county council voted to change the school resource officers to community engagement officers. A name change and a change of how they interact with schools and the like, where
right. No
longer in the schools, there may be an office or a desk there. High schools get a check-in every day, but the officers will not be patrolling schools. They will not be enforcing school policy or school discipline. Do you believe that this is a step in the right direction? And why or why not?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction, given where we were. I mean, the original agreement we had with the school system, and I'd worked with Dr. McKnight on this, and, you know, the superintendent, was that we were going to pull the police out altogether. They were going to be, you know, close to the school. They would be in the surrounding communities, but they would not be in the schools, and they'd be available to respond. And that was sort of the requirement that the state had. We didn't have to have SROs in the school, but we had to have the ability to respond quickly in a plan. And we were going to put two social workers, psychologists, you know, basically people, mental health workers in each high school. And the school system wasn't able to hire. And it's not their fault. I mean, there's just a shortage of people in the mental health field who are willing to go to work right now, and they weren't able to bring the people on. And as issues in the school system increased, particularly, you know, levels of, you know, violence and incidents in the schools, I think they reached the conclusion that since we couldn't put the social workers and people we had planned to put there, they needed to do something different. And I thought that, and my bright line was that they could be in the school, but they could not patrol the halls, and they could not enforce school discipline. This is what got us in trouble in the first place with school resource officers. They became the principal default way of dealing with student discipline, which led to a disproportionate number of arrests. Being in the halls intimidated a lot of kids. So the solution of having them in the schools so that everybody had a comfort level that the police were close, but not giving them the role they had before, seemed like a reasonable compromise since we weren't able to implement the actual plan that we'd worked out. And I'm hoping that as the school hires up, which they continue to hire these people, the mental health workers that we're looking for, that we then reexamine how we want to do this when we go back in the fall.
As you remember, there was a ghost gun incident at a high school in Montgomery County earlier this year. Do you believe that a similar incident, now that the CEOs, as they were called, the community engagement officers, policy is now in effect, that they are near the schools but not in the schools, do you think that that is the best thing in the event that something else like that happens again?
I don't believe for a second that this, that having them in the schools would have prevented this. You know, unless the student who had the gun told somebody that he had a gun, nobody would know that he had brought a gun into the school. And nobody would have known that he was in a bathroom. He wasn't, at least as far as we can tell, he wasn't in the bathroom in violation of some school policy other than carrying a gun in the bathroom and shooting somebody. But nobody would have known. And the police might have been notified quicker, and, you know, we might have been able to respond quicker, but the school nurse responded as soon as they found out about it, and that wouldn't have changed. That would have been the initial response anyway. And they did find the student who, you know, who shot the other student, but I don't think that an SRO would have prevented it. We don't know whether the kid told anybody else that he had brought a gun. We don't know if the kid had told anybody what he intended to do, but there's no evidence that he did. And, you know, unless you're going to, you know, use metal detectors, which won't work with ghost guns if they're plastic, but unless you're going to use metal detectors and things like that, it is just not feasible to think that an SRO would have made a difference in this case. Mm-hmm. But there may be cases where SROs, you know, might make a difference, or being close. I do think that being close is important in terms of response time.
The council member, Craig Rice, from District 2 in Montgomery County, called this, paraphrasing here, an imperfect policy. If you had your druthers, what do you think could be improved on this new policy regarding the CEOs?
Well, I think this policy is actually a pretty good policy. It takes out the flashpoint between students and the police. It takes the police out of school discipline. The other thing it is, the police are not enforcing, you know, basically marijuana possession. And that thing alone, apparently, has had a significant effect on the number of kids who've had police encounters, the racial disparity in the police encounters. So I think it's doing what it's supposed to do. I think Craig would like more contact, you know, more available contact. I think the school system envisions that the officers could hold assemblies, which I don't have a problem with them holding assemblies. When I was in elementary school, the police and the fire department came in and held assemblies with the students. But I think it's a pretty good balance, but I really would prefer that, you know, we had social workers and mental health workers in the school.
Mm-hmm. 202, I'm sorry, please, go ahead.
And I think both of them would have come up short in terms of preventing this particular incident, but I do think in the long term, a social worker or a mental health worker is a better person to have in the school to talk to kids than a policeman is, which is not to say police are bad people or that's an inherently bad conversation, but some people are trained to deal with mental health, others are not. Mm.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking all things Montgomery County with County Executive Mark Elrich. If you have a comment, if you have a question for the County Executive, lines are open right now. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jay, calling from Germantown. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for to give me opportunity to talk to an executive.
Yes.
A problem concerns it's insecurity in Montgomery County because all city is already unsafe anymore. If the police can help us to stop dating so many women in the city, and that time those women don't have to influence some people because they have a connection with the police, they use those power to make a lot of problem in city. And also in administration, can we find idea for everybody who work with the Montgomery County administration can speak English? Because it's hard for us when you call for something, it's so difficult to communicate with people.
So first of all, Jay, I couldn't quite understand what you were saying regarding the police. Could you repeat that?
Yes, about the police issue. sometimes when you have a problem with people tell you directly. I have a friend police who have your a tag number. They can arrest you. And because the police can get a lot, they have a lot of girlfriends outside, and those girlfriends use those power to hurt people in the city.
I kind of get the general.
Yeah, because I'm not really clear, Mr. Elridge. Could you kind of help me out here?
Yeah, I feel like, he's looking for police to play a more active or present role in the community to give people a greater sense of security. I think that, we're dealing with a department that is really short-staffed. Our department's at a low level, probably one of the lowest levels of staffing that it's been at, and it's a combination of policing becoming really difficult and people not wanting to be subject, frankly, to some of the mistreatment that they experience, and the fact that Montgomery County let the pay of our police slip to the bottom of all police departments in the region. I tried to fix this 2 years ago, and I couldn't get the council to pass the agreement we reached with the union that would have put our police department on par with the other large jurisdictions, but they passed it this year. So hopefully, better pay and improved climate will bring more police back and allow us to do more things. But we're looking at actually changing, the way, to some extent, police interact with the community. One of the big things that's been discussed is, really doing community policing, which is not policing the community, but it's about being available, talking to people, helping identify problems in places where the police can be of help. And sometimes the police discover that not everything they do requires a police solution. We're bringing in teams, for example, that'll help deal with homelessness and people who are having mental health episodes, so that all those episodes don't start out as being police episodes. At least we have the opportunity to try to handle them in a non-police, non-confrontational way. I think the big problem with policing, because, our police are not bad. They don't get us in the headlines every day like other jurisdictions do with, some misdeed or some outrageous behavior. But that's not to say that outrageous things haven't happened. And we need to do a better job of training them and what our expectations are, what it means to be a guardian rather than a warrior, and how to bring in other resources when other resources are needed rather than us using the police as the billy club for every social problem we have. We deal with drugs with the police. We deal with alcohol with the police. We use police to deal with mental health issues. None of those things should start out being police issues. They need to start out truly being treated as mental health issues. We need to provide the supports so the police don't get dragged into dealing with these things.
Mm-hmm. And the other issue that Jay was talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, you're talking about in encountering the Montgomery County's governmental administration, you're saying that you're hoping that people should speak more English, or are you hoping that there may be more people who can translate other languages? I mean, certainly Montgomery County is arguably the most diverse county in the state of Maryland right now. And Jay, I would imagine English is obviously, based on your accent, not your first language. So are you asking for more English speaking or more people who translate other languages with the county government?
No, more English speaking. I speak French, but I had to speak English to eat. But when you go to some administration and you see that person don't speak English at all, don't speak, or because you're black, they can leave you there for 1 hour, 2 hours. And they come back, we can't help you. You have to come back tomorrow.
Ah, yeah. So you're looking for someone who may speak other languages. That's not an unreasonable ask, County Executive Elridge, but it's a tall order, certainly.
Well, if I had to have enough people to speak all the languages that are spoken in Montgomery County and they had to be available in every department, we would not be ever able to come close to it. We actually increased our translation unit because we recognized we didn't have adequate translation abilities as we were, and that we were not able to serve the diversity and the changing, you know, face of Montgomery County as effectively as we should. So we added, substantially increased the size of that department, and we'll continue to look to see what we can do to continue to be more effective in communicating, you know, the languages. We made major changes to our websites to allow people to be able to access information in different languages rather than pretty much limiting it to English. I will tell you, this is a side anecdote, but, you know, originally our pages were all in English, and at the bottom of the page, among other little things that, you know, click for this, click for that, there'd be the word translate. And if you wanted the thing translated, you had to click on it. Well, the odds of somebody who doesn't speak English getting through that entire page and then getting down to the bottom and looking at a button that says translate and knowing that if they click on that button, they'll get translation options, the odds of that happening, I always thought, were like slim and none.
Yeah.
So we've put that stuff at the top of the page, and we've put different languages visible at the top of the page so that we're not making people, you know, basically give up on communicating with us. Communication for government is critically important.
Yeah.
And we thrive on it or we fail on it.
Yeah. Jay, thank you so much for your question. I appreciate your time. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich. We're talking all things Montgomery County. We're going to be talking about more public safety. We're going to talk about education. We're going to talk about politics. He's running for re-election as well. So, Kiana, calling from Rockville, we're going to talk to you next. I know you have a question about the school, so I need you to just sit tight for us. I promise I will get to your question in just a bit. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We will be taking calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. We are going to take a bit of a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment. It's via podcast on WHUR.com. You can also download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone, and you can hear this program live in its entirety. Again, if you are on the phone, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds on Sirius XM, Channel 141. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking all things Montgomery County tonight with County Executive Mark Elrich. If you have a comment, if you have a question for him, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Let me go back to the phone lines. Kiana, calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I just currently want to say a lot has to do with the community in itself. The public safety officers at the schools, they're not really necessarily my daughter attends Gettysburg. They have an officer there who's there for predominantly most of the day, even though they took them officers outside of the school. They still aren't able to help very much when it comes to the students inside the school. A lot has to do with the programs that are taken away from the kids, like the Big Brother and Big Sister programs that were helped. Staff members should be, not staff, but maybe implementing Montgomery County Public Schools with people who are trained to deal with children in the community who face trauma, or the one-parent household, or things of that nature. Children in this generation are very resentful when it comes to law enforcement for several reasons, especially children of color. Our young men and our young women, you know, they resent the police officers for many reasons, some of them very valid reasons. So you have to think of how to reach the children in this era of generations versus when we were children. It's completely different. So I think that implementing some officials or people who are educated and knowledgeable and trained to deal with these type of children and situations would be better than police officers. I mean, yeah, having them there, the presence of them may be there, but the children, like I said, are very resentful. They still will act accordingly to how children are going to act, regardless if the police are there or not. I see it every day. I'm a very active parent, volunteer at the school's football games, events.
Okay, so, Kiana, I get it. So what do you want?
They need to bring back some of the programs that they took out. Okay. Instead of spending funding on multiple police officers at the school, how about bring back one of the Big Sister or Big Brother program, the mentoring program, the rec center program, the programs where children have an outlet to go to other than acting out in the community where they have no guidance, where they have places where they're hanging out late at night. You know, just more for the children to do. They don't have any programs.
Okay, so let's see what the county executive has to say about that.
Yeah, I'm glad you framed it that way. We actually continue to expand our rec programs and our after-school programs. I don't know all the programs that have disappeared inside of schools, things they used to do and don't do now, but I do know that the county, which is, you know, somewhat separate from the school system, has put more money into after-school programming and even, you know, some evening programming because we realize the kids need something different to do and they need to have more positive interactions rather than being left to their own devices. And so I don't disagree with you that, you know, the long-term benefit would come from, frankly, you know, providing more for students to do. The other thing is, you know, we focus on this as if these kids suddenly go to school and then they have these issues and then we're dealing with this behavior. We're dealing with a lot of kids who come out of households that are stuck in poverty where the families are, you know, really bedeviled by things like paying rent and what's going to happen to us if, you know, we have to move next month. And, you know, I was a school teacher and I saw the kind of stresses that these economic factors play on kids in the family, because when parents are upset and parents are stressed out over their whether they're going to be able to maintain their housing, whether they can feed their kids, the kids begin to feel that stress. And so I've always advocated that we really need to focus on the social, I won't say social security in the same two words together, but we need to focus on the social supports in the community that help families thrive and survive rather than having families that are under a lot of stress, which the kids always wind up paying for. So that's why I was a big supporter of minimum wage. That's why, you know, I've supported expanding early childhood education so parents can afford to get affordable child care and at the same time, which allows them to get jobs as opposed to having to trade off. I can't afford to send my kid to child care, so I can't work either. So I think there are a lot of things we need to do to facilitate just greater social health in our communities. Yeah. And some of it's with the kids, some of it's with families in general.
Kiana, thank you so much for your input. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich about all things Montgomery County. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I do want to ask you about a national issue. Obviously, you, like so many of us, are very familiar what has happened this week with the leaking of the draft opinion regarding the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade, the 1973 landmark decision legalizing abortion. Since that has happened, I mean, just over the past, 4 days, we have seen all of these moves in states that really, in one way, shape, or form, show a bit of a divided country. Some 26 states either are ready to codify very, very restrictive anti-abortion laws, and then you have those like the state of Maryland expanding access to abortion. From the perspective of, you know, Montgomery County, good thing, bad thing, as we begin to see these kinds of moves coming out of Annapolis?
Well, the governor's move was a bad thing. The Supreme Court is just an insane thing. I mean, it's a bunch of right-wing lunatics with particular religious agendas seeking to impose their religious views on everybody in this country. And more fundamentally, you know, legislating what a woman can do with your body. Could you imagine a Supreme Court or any court legislating what a man can do with his body?
I'd prefer not to.
I would prefer not to too. It is just outrageous. And this represents, you know, the most narrow, divisive view of society, that some one religious group gets to dictate what other people can and cannot do and then make it a crime if they don't follow the dictates of a certain person's religion. You know, if I wanted to live under, you know, that kind of religious extremism, there are other places in the world I could go to where people give up their freedoms to live under that kind of dictatorial rule. I think this is outrageous. I think there's lots of reasons to be worried. You know, at the local level, Maryland protects the right of abortion really strongly. So there was a paper put out the other day saying that Maryland is among the states that are least likely to have the impact from the abortion ruling itself. However, if you've got the votes and support to do this, the next thing on the agenda is to basically outlaw all funding for anybody providing abortions or support for women's health in the country. And so, you know, a lot of lower income women particularly, you know, rely on programs where they can get support, they can afford abortion, they can afford birth control, they could, you know, they can actually help manage their health because they don't have the resources to do it themselves. And it is not a stretch, because the Republicans have tried to do this, to see them defund all these programs. And it would really particularly set back women, you know, for working class women, women with lower incomes, it would really set them back. And, you know, my worst fear is that we basically bring back the coat hangers and force people to do things that are really unsafe to terminate a pregnancy. This country got out of that. It was a good thing we got out of that. It is insane that you've got people who actually want to drive us back to those days. So, yeah, I'm pretty pissed off about this. And I'm really angry about Hogan. I mean, Hogan now doubles down, which kind of shows who he is. I mean, all this moderate, Mr. Reasonable crap is out the window now, because this is not a reasonable position for him to take. This is, you know, antithetical to being a moderate or being in the middle. Taking away your woman's right to choose is kind of like a fundamental assault on women.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Bobby calling from Columbia. Bobby, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you so much for taking the call.
Sure.
I just wanted to really just ask a question and make a comment, too, because it's a quasi-question. But the judges, you know, we're talking about the county executive, talking about the Supreme Court justice. But, you know, I want to kind of focus and, you know, hone in on local politics and the judges race. There's a lot of judges, circuit court judges, that are trying to run to sit on the bench, and a lot of people are not aware that judges can get elected in the state of Maryland. That's a circuit court judge. They see divorce cases, child support custody, criminal cases, and we're not having that conversation. And my question is, you know, why are we not having more of that conversation when you're talking about the school system and how single parenthood is plaguing the Black community? The father's not in the house. These programs being taken away. All of these different things can also be traced back to the court system. 70% of the jail's population is Black people, and Black people only represent 30% of the total population in Maryland. So why are we not having more of the conversation about how to be able to elect and select judges so we can have a better community? Because as we know, again, court decimates the Black community.
Mm. Mr. County Executive, your thoughts about elected judges? Let's talk about it in the county, in Montgomery County, for example.
So, you know, we're having an election this year for judges, and not all judges get elected in the entire system, but we are having an election this year. There needs to be a lot more attention to decisions that judges make. There's no media that covers rulings. There's no, you know, unbiased group of, you know, independent reporters who talk about decisions the judges made and what the decisions might mean, or where the, you know, does the judge have a habit of landing, you know, one way or the other in terms of how they punish or rule in certain cases. Do they rule differently? Is there any rule differently based on race? We don't have any of that. And I mean, we would need to basically have judicial watchdogs who provide the public with information on the judges who are running. Because when you go to the polls, I can tell you, as somebody who's been in, you know, numerous elections, the judge's election, people have not a clue who to vote for. They don't know what anybody stands for. They don't know anything about their rulings. All they know is they've got these names in front of them. Some of them are incumbents, some aren't incumbents. They have no guidance on how to vote. We would be better served if we're going to have elected judges to actually know what their records are. On the other hand, you know, the elected judges creates this problem where, and this is true with politics in general, to get elected, you need money. And I've been to fundraisers of, you know, for the court team or for the judges team, not the court team, where all the lawyers are in there contributing money. And, you know, basically what you're saying is, I want to make sure you see that I was here and I made a contribution. And it's not like they're trading, like, this case decision for a contribution, but it puts pressure. And there's an obvious, you know, desire to make sure that people know that they've contributed. And that's not a healthy thing. Judges are supposed to be neutral. You're not supposed to exercise political opinions as a judge. You're supposed to be an arbiter of the law and an arbiter of the facts, not somebody who has to worry about running for election and raising money. Because as soon as you're raising money, you've got people having expectations about, if I give you money, what are you going to do? I have real problems with some of the aspects of the court system. On the other hand, lifetime appointments are a real problem. If you don't have elections at all, then you could have very, very long appointments, and getting a judge off the court who's, you know, not a good judge becomes incredibly impossible. Think of Clarence Thomas. Think of Alito. Removing people is extraordinarily difficult without an election system. So I think we really need to think a little bit about what would be a better judicial system than the one we have today.
And Bobby, let me add that I think the county executive is right. When you go into the voting booth or what have you, you may have a list of judges. There may be seven judges. And the instructions say pick four. If you've never been a juror, if you've never had to go before a judge, it is difficult enough to get people to figure out voting for state delegate or state senator. Or have you paid attention to how many people are running for governor this year in the state of Maryland? And just on the Democratic side. And I think that, yes, there needs to be some responsibility for news organizations. And I think that we are all guilty of that, because judges' races are not sexy unless they say something crazy or do something.
But they play the black community probably and arguably the most. So it's an organization that's actually put together brief synopsis of the judges in all of the counties. If you want me to give that information, I can. But they're putting together synopsis so that everybody can get educated on who's running, and everybody has an equal amount of information up there.
I mean, yeah, you
that's
can.
That's a real public service. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you do that after I make my point. But again, you know, my point is that even, you know, black and brown people, we still have an issue with getting people to vote. We know that that's a problem. Those who are, you know, who are eligible, not all of them vote. Presidential years are big years. We are in midterms right now, and there's going to be, I'm sure, there aren't going to be a whole lot of people, unfortunately, who go out there and, you know, and vote. I mean, even when we look at the kind of results, let's talk about the judges. You've got how many people in Montgomery County? What, 1.2 million?
Right about there.
Yeah, about 1.2 million. Let's say half of them are eligible to vote. Let's say 550,000 of them are eligible to vote, and then only a third of them vote. And then when you look at the results for the judges' races, 2,000 here, 3,000 there, 4,000 there. So I agree that as it relates to your issue regarding voting for judges, that's an issue. But I think that the bigger issue is just voting, period. you know, go to the polls, make a decision. I've already gotten down into the weeds because, you know, you start talking about voting and I get mad. But what is the information that you say? What is that organization? Yeah, I'm assuming organization, this is a nonpartisan organization.
It is. It definitely is. It's called Strive 365. That's STRIVE 365.org. Strive 365. .org. And, you know, just to give an encouraging story, people were informed, Harold, and they actually went out and voted in one of the first, I think the first African-American circuit court judge in the history of Howard County in November of 2020. Mm-hmm. And from what I hear, he's doing a very good job. So when people get informed, you get them invigorated and excited, they will go to the polls, but they just need to be informed.
Bobby, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call.
Thank you.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I need to move on to some other issues. First and foremost, Dr. Monifa McKnight, first African-American woman to head the Montgomery County Public School System. What do you want to see from her?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we've got a school system that's talked about disparities, and whether you call it the opportunity or gap or the achievement gap, this has been a discussion that is more than 30 years old. And the gap, particularly for African-American students, is as yawning as it has ever been. And coming to grips with how we're going to deal with that, I think, is really, really important. I also think that, you know, that's a political question for people in the political world, because one of the things we've got to deal with is, and I've said this, you know, before, that the issues that students bring to schools affect how they perform in schools. They affect behavior, they affect academic performance. And we need to be willing to make investments in the community so that kids grow up in households that aren't affected by the negative impacts of poverty. I really do believe that's important for us to do that. That's, again, you know, why I champion things like minimum wage and early childhood education, because those are the things that can help shape a kid and can help families better raise their kids so that they're not unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. But thinking the teachers are the sole point of contact, which they're not, and the teachers are the sole entities that can alter a child's life, that's just not true. They're, you know, as a former teacher, there are a lot of other forces that play with children. And if they're not happy and if they're stressed, it can be a really severe impactor on how they're able to perform in school. I would like her to, you know, basically, you know, really focus on that, but also step up in the public sphere about telling people, you know, the school system for years has kind of stayed in its lane and county government stays in its lane, but I think we're in intersecting lanes, and having the school system and teachers in the school system talk about the kind of stresses that the kids are bringing into school and make people realize we have a responsibility outside of school to redress some of those issues that are impacting how schools can perform in school, students can perform in school.
I'm sure you know Frederick County got a new school superintendent, former area or associate superintendent in Montgomery County, Dr. Cheryl Dyson. Certainly would not want to take that accomplishment away from her, and certainly that you have to balance someone's desire to, you know, to move up and to certainly be a trailblazer and to make a difference. But some could argue that Montgomery County lost a great talent in Dr. Dyson. Your thoughts about that, and what should the county do to retain good talent when those opportunities are out there? As you know, good superintendents or opportunities for good school superintendents are everywhere, not just in Maryland, but they're in Virginia. It's across the country.
And you hit on the essence of the problem. If someone's a good superintendent and stands out, and if you stand out, you know, as an employee in Montgomery County, where you're dealing with a diverse population, all the things that many other people have more problems than even we do in dealing with, that makes you very attractive to, you know, be brought someplace else. And it is human nature for people, if you're offered a, you know, an advance in position and an advance in pay, to take those advances in position and pay. I think, you know, what the school system's got to do is make sure that, you know, that pay is good enough that you don't lose people too easily, but also make sure that you develop a bench so that if one person goes away, you don't look at your bench and say, I've got nobody here with anywhere near the skills to be able to step up into it. And so, you know, it becomes incumbent on systems to develop a talent pool that you can rely on and that you're actually training, even if they're not a assistant superintendent today, that you're bringing people up who are going to have the school skills so they can step into the major league, so to speak, when, you know, when the team calls them to come play. It's complicated.
Yeah. Before I get into some political things, I did want to ask you one other thing. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to moderate a conversation about retaining older workers, bringing them back into the workforce, and mining the institutional knowledge and resources of older workers. Do you believe that that Montgomery County is doing a good job of that? And if not, what do you think the county could do to bring older workers back into the employment fold, whether it be governmental service or what you might do to encourage the private sector to do the same?
So we do encourage the private sector to do the same, and we're well aware that, you know, we cannot discriminate against people based on age. That is actually something, you know, forbidden practice. There are nonprofits that we support that do training for you know, older adults, and they do workshops, they do job fairs. The county supports those activities. We believe that, you know, seniors still have a lot to contribute. We've got a lot of programs that where we take advantage of seniors who just want to volunteer, and so I'm a believer that, you know, the intelligence isn't stale just because the person got older, and people who have experiences and knowledge should be tapped into. As long as that's something they want to participate in, we should provide opportunities to help them do that. I think we do it. You can always do more. You know, we could always, you know, fund more job fairs. We could always fund more supplemental training for people. But I think the county at least is active in this sphere and aware that we have, you know, we have a role to play, and we do have good nonprofit partners to take this serious. I've been in rooms with, you know, seniors, you know, retirees who are helping people fill out tax returns for people who don't know how to fill out tax returns. I know somebody who does one-on-one language lessons for people from other countries who are coming to the United States and want to learn English, and he's doing conversational English language classes with these people. So we take advantage of it. We could possibly take more advantage of it, but it's important.
Let's talk a little bit about politics. I'm sure you've seen the Washington Post article about you and your running for re-election. You say that you are a misunderstood politician. I would argue that that is not a good tagline for someone who wants to be reelected.
I claim to be misunderstood. I am routinely misrepresented.
And
the Washington Post specializes in misrepresenting what I say. I mean, it's like, I don't know whether there's something in the water fountains over there, whether people, you know, how they exactly work, but it is really troubling that I can say things and they come out not the way they get said. You explain things, and it's not just the press. It's a, you know, I find this in the political campaign. I'm accused of things that I have never done and never thought of doing, and people just repeat it. And it's sort of like, you know, a certain country, which the strategy was you practice the big lie. You say something often enough, and people begin to think it's true. But fortunately, I'm used to this. I mean, the whole time I've been doing politics, people tried to portray me as, you know, like I'm this left-wing extremist that's going to destroy the universe, given half a chance. And it's just, it's not who I am, and it's not what I do. And most people who know me and work with me know that that's not true. So I'm used to dealing with it from the post. I think they spent more ink on me in the last election, trying to keep me from getting elected. I had people who marveled at how many times they wrote editorials on going after me in a way they never did to anybody else. And I'm hardly the most dangerous politician in America. So I felt like, wow, that's a lot of ink you're wasting. So, I mean, to me, it's part of the unpleasant situation that I have to deal with. But I've managed to survive this for the last, that'll be 16 years. I intend to keep surviving it. People know my record and they know what I do.
Real quick, got to talk about COVID. Numbers are up.
Yep.
And masks are down. Can you put your political crystal ball on the table and tell me, you know what you see moving forward for the county? You got a lot of guff for, you know, how you handled, COVID from, for example, the Bethesda Business District and some conservatives.
Yeah, I got a lot of guff from them, and I got people who thank me every day for keeping the county safe. I will take the people who recognize that we kept the county safe, and I can't do anything for the people who think I should have prioritized their ability to make money over the health of the public. I'm not going to do that. We knew early on that the only way to break the spread of COVID was to limit human interactions. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not a pleasant thing to do. It's not anything any of us wanted to do. But when you realize how this spread and that this disease is strictly like human contact, you get close to somebody, you get exposed to the germs, you get sick, depending on your underlying health condition, whether or not you're vaccinated, you may get mildly sick or you may die. I know that, if I look at Montgomery County compared to other jurisdictions, and the state was a great example. You know, we were like in a laboratory. When the governor opened things up and we didn't, our cases stayed down and the state's cases went up. When our cases did go up, they didn't go up as much as the state's cases went up. So if you want to know whether our policies were effective, there's a ton of data that says it's effective. And if other counties, if other jurisdictions in this country had followed the same policies we did and wound up with the same death rates that we wound up with, there'd be 300,000 more people alive today. So I'm okay with what we did. I'm comfortable. I didn't think it was fun. I understood it caused pain. But I think for families, watching their loved ones die, it caused a whole lot more pain. And so, if I have to choose between pain, I'll choose pain that doesn't involve people dying.
Okay. Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich, thank you so much for your time, sir. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, May 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.